The Drive Guys powering your afternoons Monday through Friday on Sacktown Sports.
Thanks for being with us today. We were just talking about the Portland Trail Blazers filing a protest after their loss last night to OKC. They're not going to win. But some people in the chat were remembering here, Kyle, a few years ago, Mark Rodriguez, Kings lost a protest against Memphis. Yeah, that was on the inbound. Ryan Hollins was guarding the inbounder, and he got a finger on the ball with like a tenth of the second left, and they didn't start the clock. And then I think Vince Carter was inbounding. Memphis ended up scoring a layup, and the Kings protested, and there's video evidence of everything that, wow, the clock didn't start. Kings won that game, but they lost the protest.
Yeah, and the NBA, did you hear the situation with the two-minute report from the Charlotte-Minnesota game?
It's only 10 missed
calls. Only 10 missed calls. Like, what are we doing? Like, you got that game protested. You got the two-minute report, 10 missed calls.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty egregious. That's pretty bad.
Whoever's in charge of the two-minute report, whether that's the commissioner or whatever, somebody has to look at that and go, you know what? I think we're done with this.
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's awful.
After about six, it's like, you know what?
That's not helping
anything,
It's
not helping
guys.
Anything. Yeah. 10 of them. My gosh, that's crazy.
Meanwhile, we get ready for the 49ers and the Lions this week.
Okay.
Can you imagine, Kyle? I don't know how long if you've been in Detroit much. I haven't spent much time in Detroit, but I know that you know they're starred for winners there, and the Lions won in 1957.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how big this game is this week for fans of Detroit? They've never been to the Super Bowl. They've been around since 1930, whatever.
Yeah.
Of course, the Super Bowl only started in the 60s, but the Lions have never even been to the Super Bowl.
This is arguably the biggest game in Lions history right here this week, a trip to go to the Super Bowl. And I forget who I was talking to. I was out at X-Golf in El Dorado Hills just before I came in today.
Four left!
Hey, pretty much. A great spot. I'm going to go back again and take my son. But the Lions, the city of Detroit needs this win. San Francisco, they got money. They got the Warriors. They got championships. This is not a tortured fan base talking about the Niners. The Lions, the city of Detroit, with the way the Pistons are playing, this is a tortured city sports-wise. They need this win. And so I need us, if you're not a Niners fan, let's pull our energy and cheer for our Detroit Lions this week.
I made this point yesterday. Would you agree with this? In a lot of ways, Detroit fans right now are kind of like Kings fans were last year.
Ooh.
You agree? I mean, it's different. It's football. And it's probably
football,
a larger
scale,
a bigger city. But the Lions have been, you know, they've been wandering in the desert.
Yeah, it's been a while.
For a long time.
Yeah,
last
I get
year
it.
They got a little bit of a taste. And then
I get
year,
it.
Yeah.
And now they're facing the Warriors, Steph Curry and the Warriors, Brock Purdy, you know, like – this is a legacy franchise. This is David versus Goliath, the little engine that could. That's the Detroit Lions, the underdog against the behemoth known as San Francisco. Who doesn't love an underdog, right? So
this week, I'm not crazy about the underdog.
You know what's so crazy? Let me ask you this, though, as we talk about this matchup. What was the Lions' record during the regular season?
Were they went 11 or 12?
12 and 5.
Yeah.
What was the Niners' record? 12 and 5. Why does this feel like such a big time, like David versus Goliath, you know? And I don't even know what the number is with the Niners are favorite.
7.5, I think.
Seven,
is that
what
it is? That's
seven,
that's
seven.
Massive for the NFC championship game. A championship game? Why does it feel like that when you look at the records? Lions were right there.
You know, a lot of it is just because of the brands. You know, and we're talking about the betting line, as you know, it's based on perceptions. There's some people don't really know that much about football. And if you ask them, the 49ers or the Lions?
Oh, the
49ers.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you're right about that. You're right.
So that's part of it. But I think I'm with you in that I agree that the Lions pose a very formidable and a very real threat to the 49ers this week.
Yeah, this isn't a fluke, right?
Now, if they'd lost to the Packers last week, that would have been,
happened? My gosh.
This week would be heartbreaking if the 49ers didn't pull through, but I think it'd be, on some levels, like, they lost to a good team. But it's not going to happen.
I was about to say, so you set yourself up. You're making the excuse already. You're
excuses.
We got to respect the Lions. If they beat the Niners, you know what? It could happen. So you're setting it up so
Lions
that
good.
The
That's
fall from grace isn't that far.
It's called the Drape Special.
You like that, right?
Yeah, that's not really good.
I will say this. Here's a discussion I didn't expect to be having this week. There are some people questioning Kyle Shanahan's play calling. Mm. Not just fans. Fans always question every coach for everything. But listen to this. This is from NBC Sports Bay Area, your employer, their website. And they have a thing called overreactions each week.
Yeah.
Shanahan's play calling can be as much of a liability as it is a strength. Is that an overreaction or not? Matt Maiocco, who's a great guy, great writer, even better guy, he answers these. So he says, overreaction? No.
This is Matt Maiocco saying no.
Yes.
And what is he saying about
this? He says there's a chicken and egg element to the Niners offense. When Shanahan's dialing up the plays, things are working. It appears as if the 49ers simply cannot be stopped. But is it really that the play calls are so good? Or are the players on the field executing so well that it does not matter what Shanahan is calling? He says it is probably a little of both.
Nah, I think...
It's Matt Maiocco!
I think Kyle Shanahan is a genius. Now, as I'm watching the game the other day and looking at social media, people are, you know, saying, Kyle, run the ball, you know, instead of... But they ran the ball 24 times. They threw it 39. Like, do you want it to be 30-30? I thought the play calling was fine, and I disagree with Matt. I think Kyle Shanahan is a genius.
He goes on to say, the most bizarre call of the game was when the 49ers opened the second half with a running play to receiver Juwan Jennings. He said that one caught everyone by surprise, including the 49ers head coach. There's a problem because when the 49ers checked into a play on the wrong wristband,
right,
the one in which Debo would be featured, but Debo was out of the game. Anyway, and he said a lot of this game did not go smoothly. A lot of the early part of the game pre-scripted as Shanahan wants to see how the defense will react to certain formation shifts and motions.
Right.
But then the first series a bust because after a first down, they got into a first and 15. The next two possessions were good with 12 and 10 play offensive possessions, but two of the three drives in the third quarter were three and outs. He says there's no easy answers. That just stunned me that Matt Maiocco, who knows what he's talking about, would go there. There's also this from Adam Schein. Yeah. NFL.com. This was today. Indeed, I love Kyle, but his play calling and clock management were goofy all game.
Darn.
Especially at the end of the first half. A lot of people have pointed to that.
Could not agree more.
Yeah.
Could not agree more.
Yeah, I don't know if he played that properly, the end of the first half. But I do agree, you know, we were watching a broadcast, and they were saying Shanahan likes to be in control of that 9-minute stretch last 4 minutes first half, you know, 4 or 5 minutes to start the second. And so the clock management, a little wacky, yes, but I get it, though. I understand what he's trying to accomplish.
He's trying two for one, the football version of the two for one, basically.
But at times, I would argue that Kyle Shanahan could be too smart for his own good. Like, he's trying to be too smart, too clever. I think, in terms of a play caller, he's the best in the NFL. Him, Andy Reid, both those guys are right up there.
What did you think of the fact that they threw so much, even when Brock was struggling with what for him are easy throws?
It's the NFL nowadays. That's football. And I understand you got CMC, but there's different ways you get CMC the ball. CMC rushed for 17 times. Brock Purdy 6, which is, you know, not design runs, obviously. I think when you get a lead, you turn to the run. But in today's NFL, guys are throwing it. I mean, look at the Packers. Aaron Jones, as great as he's been, you know, the last few weeks, 18 carries. And so I think when you have the weapons they have, I don't mind throwing the ball. And y'all been telling me Brock Purdy's this MVP candidate. Put the ball in your best player's hands, right?
Yeah, you can't. That worked out. I'm going to ask Nate, because Nate, of course, does...
What you got, Nate?
With Emil, he does the Return of the Empire podcast. Did you think that Christian McCaffrey should have gotten more touches?
In the first half, especially.
That's the number one thing I hate.
And I think that's fine. I do want to point out something to kind of bring that media conversation full circle. You guys were talking about with the Kings, how Kings media has a lot of softballs. You know, it's easy, and you know, you're talking about players that used to complain about the Kings. Look at the contrast right now. Matt Maiocco is like the number one media guy for the Niners, right? Like he's the, I don't know, Matt George. Like you said, Matt George, for example.
And he's a really nice guy, too.
He is. So I was at the game this weekend and in the media room. I got to see firsthand, you know, what that's like. I've covered, you know, 20 Kings games here, too, in person. It is so much more intense in that Niners game. I know it was a playoff game, but even Mayoko, there was some back and forth between him and Shanahan. Like, you better come with your – Shanahan kind of set it up like, you better come with your questions. You better know everything you're going to ask me. You better know specifics. Otherwise, I'm just going to push you away and just essentially kind of maybe make you feel dumb or come off as that. Like, it's no joke. So, as you were saying about the Kings earlier, like, it's a different environment here in Sacramento. Yeah, like you said, they're all trying to get to one place, and in San Francisco and presumably a lot of other high stakes places.
Professional
teams.
Yeah, you're right, but you know that was a stinking playoff game too.
It was a playoff game,
you didn't perform it that well. You know, you could have lost that game, and so
I feel like if that was a Kings Mike Brown win game 7 against the Warriors and it was an ugly game that they won, it would be all laugh, all fun times. There were some snarky remarks, like a guy asked about Juwan Jennings and he was just like, "What are you doing?" Essentially, that was the question.
That was it. Wow.
With that. And Kyle answered very, you know, the guy doesn't have an expression on his face. Like, he's like a killer. So it's crazy to see.
Yeah. Speaking of Brock Purdy, as we just were, here it is. I think even Kyle will agree with me on this. I don't
really
know for sure, but I think this is the worst Brock Purdy take we've heard all year. I can't imagine a worse one. And I think you'll agree with me, but we'll find out. When we return, Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.
Live and local, it's the Drive Guys. Watch the show on youtube.com/SacktownSports1140.
Or listen on the Sacktown Sports app.
One of the great things about getting to do this show is that we have the smartest listeners slash viewers in radio slash YouTube. For example, Gary Provencher. I think this is a really interesting point. Possibly Shanahan's play calling was a little funky because he and LaFleur know each other so well. I think that's an interesting theory. They know each other very well.
I can see that.
Uh-huh.
Try to switch it up, you know, throw a couple of curveballs out there.
Yeah.
New wrinkles, if you will.
Yeah. But I think it would be kind of like, I think the biggest reason is play calling was funky. It's like if you're a pitcher and like two or three of your pitches aren't working, you know, for Kyle Shanahan, it's like, what is wrong with my team? Yeah. All right, Debo's not there and Brock can't throw the ball 8 yards downfield. It's tough to call plays when the plays you normally call just aren't functional.
Right, and is that a play calling issue? Or is that a personnel issue? No Debo. Brock's not playing not as sharp as we've seen him. And so they got it done. Mm-hmm. Think about it, too, like this, if you're a Niners fan. Your team was what? Probably a C performance. You know, C minus E. Like, it wasn't a great Niners performance, but you got the win.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that matters. And now it's sort of like, I said this during the regular season regarding my Eagles. It didn't prove to be that way. But you're winning without playing your best basketball. Same thing with the Kings earlier this season.
Yeah.
They were winning, but they weren't playing their best. The Niners, they won, but they weren't playing. So the room to grow, if you will, or the high point for the Niners is way high. We'll see if they bounce back this week and get their A game against Detroit.
A lot of the questions that have resurfaced about Purdy, and some of them, frankly, we know never fully went away. But I think they're fair. That's all in bounds. But there was one take. I just think this is a terrible take. And I'd love to know what you think, Drapes. This was a couple days ago, so you've probably heard this. This was Ryan Clark, former Steeler defensive back, right? Here's what Ryan Clark had to say on ESPN a couple days ago after Brock Purdy's poor performance in the win over the Packers.
I'm about to make a confession. The single hardest thing I had to do this year was act like Brock Purdy deserved to be in the conversations with the other people we're mentioning in that tweet. Mm. Because he was playing extremely well and operating in that offense and distributing the ball to Kittle and Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, we had to continue to include him in conversations with the Lamar Jacksons. We had to continue to include him in conversations with the Josh Allen. Those things are not alike. Brock Purdy is a fine player. Brock Purdy can operate in Kyle Shanahan's offense at an extremely efficient level. Brock Purdy doesn't raise the level of play of anyone around him. And so when you talk about Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, the people around them benefit from having those sorts of players at the quarterback position. Brock Purdy benefits from having the sort of players he has at the skill positions around him. And so when we look at that game against the Green Bay Packers, even with Jordan Love throwing an inopportune, inexplicable interception to end the game, I was sitting there watching them going, man, the NFL world should be excited that Jordan Love doesn't play for the San Francisco 49ers.
Here's why I think that's an awful, awful take.
All right, let's unpack it.
Yeah, and if you want to say you don't think Purdy's that good, fine. You know, I disagree with that, but that's fine. That's especially for a former player. But when he says, well, I got to confess that acting like I thought Brock Purdy belonged in that MVP conversation, it was hard for me to do that. Because what you're confessing then is you have no credibility. You're saying, I didn't think it, but I said it. Well, how do I ever believe anything you ever say? If you say, I never thought he was that good. All right, again, I disagree. But don't come in with, before when I said he belonged to the MVP conversation, it was hard for me to pretend like I thought that was the truth. That's an awful take. You're telling me not to listen to you.
Ryan Clark, I agree with you on this point. What he said to start that soundbite basically is proof that what he said earlier in the season, he was lying.
Yes.
He was just saying that for TV.
Yes.
Just saying that for clicks. And I get it. It's an awful take. But I thought the last 45 seconds of that, after that part, he was spot on, 100% correct. That's the thing. You can get mad, Whitey, about that first part. Yes, 100% agree with you. How can we trust this guy? How can we believe what he's saying on air? I try to say things I actually believe. I think, as he said, Brock Purdy's a fine quarterback, but don't you dare put him in the conversation of Patrick Mahomes, of Josh Allen, of Joe Burrow.
Don't you dare say Jordan Love is better than Brock Purdy right now.
Right.
That's what I would say.
On that day, before that interception,
Jordan Love was
better than Brock Purdy.
If you're going to slice it that way, okay, but how about Brock's final drive against Jordan Love's final drive?
On that day, between 4:32 and 4:45, but Ryan Clark really made himself look like a fool.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
And that's what's so frustrating. Let's have this conversation really quick about this, because this is a frustrating thing for fans, too. We are inundated with talking heads on TV who just say things to get a rise out of people,
mm-hmm.
just say things to get clicks. And that's where sports media has, like, morphed into. What happened to journalism? What happened to standing behind what you say? Think about it with me. I will never say the hardest thing I had to do was say Brock Purdy. Like, I've been on this Brock Purdy train since the get-go, and I'm not – he may win a Super Bowl, and I still might not, because I believe in what I'm saying. It's not just for clicks. Sure, it works. It helps me out, no doubt about it. But I don't put Brock Purdy among the top five quarterbacks in the league. What Ryan Clark is doing –
You do put him in the top 10, though.
He's at number 10. I think I did say he's at number 10. Yeah. I gave him number 10. But what Ryan Clark is doing is a disservice to sports media.
And it's a disservice to himself.
Yes. 100. And that's the worst kind of sports journalism, sports media talk. Because you're just saying things to get a rise, to get clicks, to go viral. You know, some people say that about my guy Kendrick Perkins when it comes to the NBA. Like, he flip-flops. Like, he's a flip-flopper. I don't know if he is or not. But Ryan Clark sounds like a flip-flopper right now.
I don't understand why, when he made the original comments that he's alluding to, I would think that it would have been interesting if he'd have said, you know, I don't think this guy's that good. When everyone else was saying he's an MVP candidate, to have one guy saying, I'm sorry, I don't see it, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Right, right.
Instead, but, I had to go along. Why did you have to go along with it? And if you did, again, does that mean that if Brock Purdy plays really well this week and wins the Super Bowl, you're going to go, man, a few weeks ago I pretended like I didn't really think he was MVP, but right. now, you know, that was right. hard for me.
Also, are you lying now, Ryan Clark?
Exactly.
That's like, right. what?
Now you, yeah.
Do you
yeah.
love Brock Purdy?
Right, right. Right.
And here's the thing, too, fellas. Anymore. This is the problem, too. He's a former player. He's supposed to be better. Like, mm-hmm. I can see if you're Joe Schmo, don't have any credentials behind your name, you're trying to make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
This is Ryan Clark.
JoeSchmo.com.
Joe
right?
Schmo, Joe Fan, or whatever our guy was. But
Freddie the Fan.
Freddie the Fan. Freddie yeah. the Fan. Freddie the Fan. This is Ryan Clark, a face of ESPN's NFL coverage. And now, to your point, how are we going to believe anything he says from here on out?
Yeah.
What if he's talking about golf this week or Patrick Mahomes? Like, is he just saying it just for TV?
Was it Carissa Thompson?
She said
that she made something
up. She made stuff
up. And she was doing that podcast with Aaron Andrews. And apparently Aaron Andrews said, oh, I've done that.
Yeah.
And then people have asked her about that and she had no comment on that. But that's why would you say that?
Why would you
if
say
If you had to do it sometime, I wouldn't do it. I'd hope. But okay, if you did it, you did it. Don't come out and say you did
right,
it.
Right, yeah. It's making, like I said, the industry look bad and yourself
exactly.
look bad.
Yes.
But Carissa Thompson, she survived it.
I know.
Like it's
And there are some people that say, oh, what's the big deal?
Right. You hope that what people are saying, they actually believe.
Right.
It's tough.
So that's why I say that's the worst take. All the other stuff I disagree with, but I get it. It's interesting, but you can't. So, well, before I said this, I got to confess to you, it was really hard for me to pretend that's what I meant. I'm not listening to him ever again. Ever again?
Ever again?
No.
Ever, ever?
Why should I? Fool me once, you know,
right.
all that.
Yeah, his credibility is shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
And he did it himself. When we return, did today bring the Debo injury answers the 49ers?
Sorry to cut you off.
No, please.
But we got some breaking Kings news.
Really?
Yes. I know we are up against it. Nate, do we have a breaking news stinger? Or?
When it breaks,
we have it first.
It's Sactown Sports Breaking News.
Justin from the Sacramento Kings just came across my email.
Yeah?
And no, it's not good. It's not good.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Kings forward Sasha Vezenkov injured his right ankle during the third quarter of Monday night's game against the Hawks. Imaging confirms Sasha suffered a mild right ankle sprain. He will be listed as out versus the Warriors and will be reevaluated in 7 to 14 days. So Sasha's out a week or two because of a moderate right ankle sprain.
At a time when you got a lot of games coming up. A
lot of games, and he's been playing extremely well, and now another injury for the Sacramento Kings.
All right, thank you, Drapes. Yep. Yeah, what that means for the Kings and also the latest on Debo's injury when we come right back. Drive, guys. Hack Town Sports.
Join us for Championship Sunday as the Ravens host the Chiefs at noon and the Lions battle the 49ers at 3:30. The NFC and AFC Championship heard right here on your home for the NFL playoffs and Super Bowl 58, Sactown Sports. The Drive Guys powering your afternoons Monday through Friday on Sactown Sports.
Well, moments ago, Kyle Draper shared with us a Kings update, and I have to confess, when he first said, we've got an update, I thought we were talking about a trade. But then he shook his head and said, nope, it's not good news. And it could be worse, but it looks like Sasha's on the shelf for a bit. Not good with a lot of games coming up here on this road trip in a hurry.
Yeah, moderate right ankle sprain will be out tomorrow and reevaluated in 7 to 14 days. So he's out at least a week. So we're talking Golden State. We're talking, who's the next team? Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Memphis and Miami. So that's four games right there that Sasha would be out. And
minimum. Typically reevaluated. Says, right. There's no guarantee
right.
he'll be back.
Minimum.
Week. Yeah.
And what's upsetting about this, if you're a Kings fan, if you're Mike Brown, I feel like Mike was just starting to figure out a rotation. You know, a group of guys he was going to turn to. And Sasha had been a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
He had broken into the rotation, and he had been performing well. Now Sasha's out. I'm not sure what they do. Do you keep it small? Do you throw in a Duarte? Do you turn to somebody else? I don't know what options Mike Brown had. Maybe lean on Trey Lyles more? I don't know. But Sasha had been playing well.
He'd been really shooting the ball well.
Yes. Yes, really shooting. That's where we need our guy Trey Lyles to step in. Like, who's going to fill in that role? And so hopefully it's Trey or somebody.
Yep.
An opportunity. Next man up, as they say.
Yeah, it's a great point. As you said, the bench outscored the Hawks bench. I think it was 43-19, which is understandable because the Hawks shorthanded anyway.
Right.
And they're
right.
not very good. But still, you're right. I had the same impression. It's like, wow, we have what looks like a rotation here.
Yes.
And just in time.
Just in time. You know, you got this long road trip. These next seven games, arguably the most important seven games of the season, because you see where the Kings are right now, you know, 24-18. This could go one of two ways. You know, you go 3-4 on this road trip, you know, it's not that great. But if you go 5-2, you could be really doing something. And so, especially in the Western Conference.
I was surprised that Davion played as much as he did.
I was shocked also, but you know, as I thought about it, one, Davion was a catalyst in that win against Atlanta on the road, the way he played, the way he was harassing Trae Young and DeJounte Murray in that second half. And so I think Mike saw that and knew that elite-level perimeter defense is going to be needed, especially with DeJounte Murray playing the way he did. And I thought Davion played excellent. I think he won the defensive player of the game. Crown. And so we'll see. You got Steph Curry tomorrow. You got the Warriors tomorrow. Is Davion going to be in the rotation again?
I know a lot of Kings fans, at least I get the sense, a lot of Kings fans are kind of overlooking the Warriors like, ah, they're done. Kings have finally figured them out. I don't feel that way about this game.
Not at all. Not because you've seen it. Steph Curry and those guys, they like kicking the Kings' butt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're going to be up for this game. You know, it's the second night of a back-to-back. They got Atlanta tonight.
Right.
But, you know, I think they understand it is a rivalry, you know. And anytime they could treat Sacramento like little brother, I think they're, you know, going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and their backs are against the wall. I know it's cliche, but they're feeling that way. And the last thing they want is to have little brother from the north come in and kick sand in their faces too. So that should be a fun one. Thank goodness the Warriors have to play tonight as well, as you pointed out. Now, speaking of injuries, Deebo Samuel, he did not practice today. His availability for Sunday figures to be a question that's going to linger throughout the week. Shanahan said he feels better. When asked if Deebo's condition makes him more optimistic for chances of playing, Shanahan said, "It makes me feel better." But he did not offer any insights into what's going on with Deebo other than his right shoulder hurts. I have to confess, I'm a little confused by that because it's his right shoulder, and I know initially he was injured when he sustained a blow to his left shoulder, so I'm not even sure. I thought it was his left shoulder, apparently the right shoulder, but we don't know what's wrong with it. The x-rays and MRI have not revealed any cracks, so there could be some joint damage in there, but obviously it's very serious if it's a couple days before the NFC title game and Deebo is still not out there practicing, and they're still not sure he's going to play.
Yeah, this would be a big loss because one thing Deebo gives you, he's like that Swiss Army knife. He can line up anywhere on the field, backfield, split out, slot. Like, he can be – he's that Swiss Army knife that if you're a defense, how do you prepare for that? You know, we know where Ayuk is going to line up. We know where Kittle's going to line up. We know to an extent where what CMC is going to do. Like, Deebo to me is that X factor. And you look at any of the national talk shows, they're like, can the Niners win without Deebo Samuel? Yes, but it becomes that much more difficult, especially against the Lions team, who is not a great against the pass. So if you're fully healthy, you should be able to pick them apart passing-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, without one of your guys, perhaps one of your top guys, it becomes that much more difficult to pass. And so this would be a big loss for them.
Yeah.
And, Whitey, you know, one last point. I've been hearing all season long is the only thing that can derail the Niners is injuries. The reason they lost three in a row middle of the season because they wasn't healthy.
You're starting to get a little sarcasm creeping in there.
No, right? No.
Because your
it's the
your
truth.
Eyes when your eyebrows go, what I'm hearing, that's when I know.
I'm just being honest.
I'm hearing,
everybody has said, and Nate, you know this. Everybody has said, the Niners, the only thing we're worried about is health. Now, one of their star players could possibly be out. This would be a big blow.
That's I know what. Kyle Shanahan had said that today was a big day. He said, we should know Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We should have a better idea if Debo's playing. Well, it's Wednesday. They have maybe a little bit better idea, but he didn't practice, so hopefully better news tomorrow. I still can't imagine that he's not going to play.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, this guy is Mr. Everything for this team. And here's the thing about Debo.
Mr. Everything is the quarterback, but
Mr. Irrelevant is the quarterback. Like literally irrelevant. You know, I could go back there and quarterback this offense.
I hear his name everywhere, Draves. I don't know if he's very irrelevant.
He's probably the most polarizing player in the NFL right now, which is crazy.
To add on that Debo injury thing, Brandon Ayuk said today that he only expects Debo to play, and those two are very tight. So.
There you go.
I don't know. Take what you want from that.
Maybe they're sandbagging a little bit.
It might be a little
gamesmanship. Sandbagging the Lions.
Yeah, a little, you know, do we prepare for Debo or not? Of course, you know, if I'm the Lions, you expect Debo to play. But no, man, this is, he is so valuable to this team. Like, to me, him and CMC are the two most important people. And I was going to say earlier, we know Trent Williams is, you know, the heart and soul. But I could argue Debo is, too, the heart and soul of this team. Like that chip on your shoulder, that the way he went into Philadelphia and gashed the Eagles, he earned a lot of respect from me.
I do think that the fact that Debo didn't play, that also contributed to the unevenness of Shanahan's play calling.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Purdy's.
No, Purdy was fine. He was great. but they were really... The game plan, it appears, was really based on a lot of Debo.
Yeah.
A lot of Debo. So then they had to make some adjustments. I think that's one reason. And the Juwan Jennings run was a great example. Like, we're not supposed to give him the ball.
Right.
That was one of the things that
made
it look
good. That's Debo's play. Yeah. Not Juwan Jennings' play. No, it's.
But do you really think Brock Purdy's the most polarizing player in the league?
Yes.
Wow.
I think so. Like, who's another player that elicits this kind of debate, this kind of reaction?
Well, it's
and it's not just us. I'm talking nationally.
It's funny because Jimmy G was very polarizing.
He was that way too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Brock Purdy, second coming to Jimmy G. I've been telling you guys that. You know?
I mean, Deshaun Watson, if I'm going beyond football.
Yeah, beyond football.
Aaron Rodgers,
no
certainly.
No way does Jimmy G win that game against the Packers. That drive. No way he has that drive Brock had to win that game. So he's not. I'm not going to let you go that far, Drapes. He's not the second coming of Jimmy G.
No, but Jimmy G. early in his Niners tenure.
Yeah, pre ACL, that was a different player.
Right.
That was a different dude.
You're thinking of Jimmy G. the last 3 years or whatever, the shortcomings that he had.
Oh, the majority of his career is a 49er player.
Jimmy G. the Patriot, maybe. Maybe.
Yes. Oh, you going
maybe.
Back there.
Ooh,
let's go high school Jimmy G.
High school.
I don't even know where he went.
But
I think he played linebacker, too, in high school.
Did he?
At some Jimmy point, really? He played linebacker.
I mean, he's a big dude.
Is Brock Purdy the most polarizing player, Nate, off the top of your head?
I mean, for me, I just, as a Niners fan, it's all I hear, Brock Purdy.
Right,
all
that's
day,
what
every,
I feel like.
So I know I'm biased. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, the debate's insane. What other player can you talk about like this? It was Tua for a while, I feel like.
Dak's pretty
maybe.
Polarizing.
Dak because of the Cowboys, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Also right now, I mean, the spotlight is on. So I think maybe caught up in the moment. But, yeah, Dak, I don't know. Cowboys are whatever.
Yeah. You know, Ryan Clark said, I got confession to make. Like that Foo Fighters song. I got a confession to make. Before the season started, I was doing the show with Chris.
Yeah.
I said Jake Moody was going to be a candidate to be NFC Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Ouch.
He didn't even make the
All-Rookie. I was about to say, how's that going for you?
He's not even the All-Rookie kicker.
Oh, man.
You brought that back up, though. How about that? That would be one I'd probably bury. You know, a take. You know what? Long as Drapes doesn't bring it up, I'm good. I don't have to worry about that.
He made his kicks, too, in the Packers game. So I know the blocked one,
big,
but, you know, you look at the Carlson. Carlson didn't, so.
That changed
here
that
we are.
Whole game. When we come back, by the way, you got Emil back there. Not to make you nervous.
Is he back there?
Yeah, he's lurking.
I'm giving him one of these.
I've never even seen that. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, that's old school, man.
I don't know
back
what
that kids is. Used to do back in the day, man. Why? First of all, what time's your show, Nate? What time's your show?
6 to 7.
Why
tonight.
The heck is Emil here so early?
I don't know.
Why is he here like 3 hours early?
Dude, he wants some problems for you, I guess. I don't know.
When we come back, it's a new way to try to land an expansion team. Maybe Sacramento should try it. Who knows? Emil may pop in at some point as well here as we roll on here, Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.
When it breaks,
we have it first.
It's Sacktown Sports breaking news.
ESPN is reporting that the Los Angeles Chargers have hired Jim Harbaugh to be their next head coach. Breaking news here from the Drive Guys. Chargers hire Jim Harbaugh to be their next head coach, Kyle.
Massive move by the Chargers. Right move by the Chargers. Tailor made to win right now for Jim Harbaugh. Best situation out there for him in the NFL. And so this is just a match made in heaven. This is huge news. We know how great of a coach he is. Look what he did here. Look what he did, obviously, at Michigan. And now he's going to turn the Chargers back into a relevant team. This is big news.
Mm-hmm. He's got a quarterback.
Got a quarterback. One thing that's all you need right there, baby.
NFL franchises, some of them just flop around for years trying to find a quarterback. And there's a situation where, well, that team's got a good one.
Yes. And he's a motivator, too. Like, he elevates the talent around him. Look what he did to Michigan. Remember the knock at Michigan? Oh, they could never beat Ohio State. He could never. Well, now they've beat Ohio State three straight times. Now they own Ohio State. Look at what happened when he was suspended this season as well. That thing kept humming like a well-oiled machine. His players played for him. And so I think this is a slam dunk, out of the park kind of hire for the Chargers.
And he's also in the same conference as his brother.
A little Harbaugh again. That would be
brother who beat him in the Super Bowl.
A little help. That would be interesting. A little get back. And that's the only thing missing from his resume, right? Is a Super Bowl win now. And so now he has a contender. Man, the AFC just got that much tougher. Look at the quarterbacks and the coaches out. It's going to be a bloodbath out there.
I agree with you. I think it's a great move for the Chargers. I'm just wondering how much that's going to improve their standing in L.A. I wonder if there's any hope, you know, of the people actually noticing, oh, the Chargers. Well, that's nice. You know?
Yeah, I don't. They'd have to win.
That's
right?
A big mountain.
That's a big mountain to climb. You know, it's, you know, they get to the Super Bowl, though. I mean, maybe, but you're right. That's a big mountain to climb out there.
Yeah, but a good match. Good match for them. Good match for him. Now, I guess a lot of people, Emil just popped his head in to say hi to you. I know you guys are buddies. But, you know, he was saying, as a lot of people are saying, I guess it's Belichick to Atlanta now. And I know that thing seemed to be gaining momentum. But Harbaugh to the Chargers, I thought, oh, yeah, that's a no-brainer. But Belichick to the Falcons, I didn't see coming.
Not at all. And because I don't know if the Falcons have the quarterback situation.
They do not.
Exactly. And Bill Belichick, historically,
Steve Borkowski ain't walking through that door.
Exactly.
Michael Vick ain't walking through that door.
The shell of Matt Ryan ain't walking through that door. Like, and here's the thing, though. Belichick, the big knock on him has been his inability to draft the quarterback position. He goes to Atlanta. Is he in charge of personnel? Is he in charge of making that decision? It doesn't seem like a good fit to me.
Yeah.
Not at all.
I wonder if that's part of the appeal of Atlanta. Maybe they are saying, you run the show.
Right. You know? And, you know, obviously Dallas didn't make a move with the coach, but that was one of the reasons why Dallas didn't seem a good fit. Like, Jerry Jones is the running things there. Atlanta, you know, Arthur Blank would just be like, you know what? Mm-hmm. Belichick's the guy. And so this is a redemption kind of opportunity for Bill, but I think you talk about a mountain that's too high to climb. I think the Falcons, that's even though that division is, you know, suspect, but outside, that's a tough place to win.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, hey, coach, you win 9 games, you might win the division.
Right, exactly.
Right.
You got to get a quarterback down there, though. You got to get a quarterback.
Mark Rodriguez on the chat asks, how will Harbaugh deal with no Chargers fans?
Ooh.
I wouldn't be surprised if he had an attendance clause in his contract. Seriously.
like a bonus or something?
Like an incentive clause.
Why not, right? Why not? And I still don't like the move of the Chargers to go to Los Angeles. But when you look at it, you got the Rams. The Chargers just don't – they're not sexy. They're not – you know, it's not a cool thing to be a Chargers fan, you know? And so – but –
you could turn that around, turn them into a winner. We talked about it. They're not that far off. Maybe they'll come. If you build it, they will come, right?
Mm-hmm. This is eerily similar to when he took over for the 2011 Niners. They had the roster there consistently bad, I think 6-10 the year before.
Yeah, 6-10.
In 2010.
But the talent was there.
But the talent was there. The talent is there for, you know, there's injury-prone guys, like on both teams. Obviously Herbert's better than Alex Smith, but, you know, untapped potential there. And there's, talent like Joey Bosa's there. They got key guys. So don't be shocked if Harbaugh does his thing again and takes that team somewhere.
And don't be shocked if your Eagles don't get Lord Fangio and he ends up joining Jim Harbaugh
reunite
the Chargers.
Really?
Wow.
You think so?
Wow.
Yes. He was on a staff, I think, at Stanford with the 49ers.
Wow. Yeah. That would be
Greg Roman, too.
Yeah.
Was with Harbaugh.
Yeah. That would be massive. I'm looking at this Chargers roster. They got some talent.
A little bit of age defensively, but that's kind of nitpicking.
Right.
I think they got a pretty good team. And I don't know, they're. Stokely was a good coordinator, just didn't seem to have the feel for being a head coach,
right? Yeah. And when you look at, you know, the Chargers, I'm looking at their division right now. Chiefs obviously going to be there. Are the Raiders a threat?
Antonio Pierce?
I don't know yet. Broncos? And so I think the Chargers could challenge for second, and Kansas City might be going down regular season-wise. Yeah. You know, and so he could build something there.
And you know those are all things that Harbaugh looked at.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. When you look at it, if you were to talk about Herbert in terms of the quarterback standings in the AFC, you got Josh Allen, I would put ahead of him. You got Lamar, Joe Burrow, and then
he's
Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah.
Top five in AFC?
As far as just being a gifted thrower, easily top five.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where you got to start at. So this is a major move. One we saw coming pretty much, like a match made in heaven. But this is huge for them.
He's going to have to bring in someone who can help draft, too. His drafting was pretty awful for the 49ers.
Trent Baalke's available, I think.
his best pick was Alden Smith, and that was amazing, but I was like a gimme. So him and Baalke are buddies, aren't they?
Yeah. So, good for the NFL. Real quick here.
Yeah.
I wanted to touch on this because, you know, here in Sacramento, we're interested in getting more teams. Maybe we bring in the A's and it helps us get a baseball team at some point. There was talk about a year ago of Vivek working on a hockey team coming here. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it done this way before. The owner of the Jazz sent a letter to the NHL and said, "We request an expansion team." So it's like, why not?
Right.
You know? And I think the league says, "Oh, okay, well, we'll look at that."
Right.
But typically leagues will come to you or
come
they
to
won't.
You.
And
yeah.
when they come to you, it's like, "We are considering you for one of our openings."
Right.
But the owner of the Jazz is like, sends a letter. We request a team. Maybe that's what we need to try, Kyle.
And what do you do if you're Gary Bettman with that request? You look at it. All right. What were we talking about?
He does what you do with my box
scores.
Right,
exactly. No, submit the request. Maybe it's not.
That's bold.
Hey,
that's a bold
if you don't ask, you know, you're not going to get fed. You're not going to get it. So.
Yeah. But it was because I was filling in on the show, I think, about a year ago, and we were talking about Vivek, and there was a lot of talk about the Golden One, how there's the seats, it's not really set up for hockey. There's something about where the rink would go. There's too many seats. I don't know. Anyway, we know that Vivek is looking, and the powers that be in Sacramento, they're looking. They're looking to add.
Sacramento is about to explode. Like, the thirst for another professional team is there, whether it's baseball, whether it's hockey. It's one of the fastest growing areas, I believe. You see DoCo and what it's doing down there. You see the Bay Area transplants moving up to Sacramento as well. And so, I think this area is ready for another team.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we've already had two breaking news stories today.
How about that, man?
Done.
Yeah. And the trade deadline is still in 2 weeks. You know it's going to be a Woj bomb or something somewhere.
So stay tuned. And coming up, the toughest thing about the Kings' upcoming 7-game road trip next with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.